Hi everyone, welcome back to the MedBullet Step 2 and 3 podcast. In today's episode, we covered the topic of indications for cesarean, found under the obstetric section at medbullets.com. Let's begin with a clinical snapshot. A 28-year-old G0P1 woman presents to the hospital in active labor. Transabdominal ultrasound demonstrates her fetus to have a transverse lie. She is taken to the operating room for a cesarean delivery. Let's continue with an introduction to indications for cesarean. As a general overview, remember that this is one of the most frequently performed surgeries in the world. In terms of the epidemiology, this is performed for about 1 out of 3 births in the United States. Demographically, there is an increased likelihood with age greater than 30 years, premeparity, multigestational pregnancy, prior cesarean delivery, obesity, and wealth. In terms of location, a vertical incision is made in the mid-abdomen. A horizontal incision is made in the lower abdomen. In terms of the classification, a primary cesarean section is the first cesarean delivery a woman has. An urgent cesarean section is performed for maternal or fetal physiological distress that is not immediately life-threatening. An emergent cesarean section is performed for immediate life-threatening maternal or fetal instability. In terms of the Robson's classification system, remember that there are 10 categories to assess and compare cesarean delivery rates between hospitals. This takes into account parity, single versus multiple gestation, spontaneous versus induced labor, previous cesarean delivery, fetal lie, and gestational age. Now let's discuss indications. Maternal indications include a vaginal delivery that would cause increased morbidity or risk of mortality for the pregnant patient. Fetal indications include vaginal delivery that would cause increased morbidity or risk of mortality for the fetus. The most common indications include a failure of labor progression, non-reassuring fetal heart rate or fetal distress, which could include a cord prolapse, and fetal malpresentation. This may include posterior chin position, transverse lie, brow presentation, shoulder presentation, and compound presentation. Other indications include abnormal placentation. This includes placenta previa, vasa previa, placenta accreta, and placental abruption. If there is high potential for fetal macrosomia, such as 5,000 grams or 4,500 grams in women with diabetes, prior uterine surgeries, such as previous cesarean or a myomectomy, obstructed labor, such as cervical cancer, large fibroids, pelvic fracture, or cephalopelvic disproportion, if there is a high risk of perinatal infection transmission, such as in the case of active genital herpes or an HIV with viral load greater than 1,000 copies, if there is failed operative vaginal delivery, or if there is maternal trauma. Now let's discuss the techniques. The skin incision is transverse, as this provides improved cosmesis, reduces postoperative pain, and reduces hernia formation. The two most common types are the fanisteal, which is curved and is 2 to 3 centimeters above the symphysis pubis and provides the best cosmetic outcomes, or the Joel Cohen, which is straight and is 3 centimeters below the anterior superior iliac spines. This is better for infections, bleeding, and operating room time outcomes. The vertical midline is a classical incision. This reduces time from incision to delivery, has the least risk of bleeding, least risk of nerve injury, has improved exposure, is easy to extend, but has the worst cosmetic outcomes. A hysterotomy or uterine incision is typically transverse. It must be large enough to fit the fetus without trauma. Fetal extraction then involves placing fingers around the head and lifting, and placental extraction typically occurs spontaneously. Now let's discuss complications. This may include surgical site infection, which occurs in 3 to 15% of cases. Risk factors include obesity, rural residence, older or younger maternal age, pre-gestational or gestational diabetes, prior cesarean delivery, hypertension of pregnancy, chorioamnionitis, premature rupture of membranes, twin pregnancy, greater number of vaginal exams, prolonged labor prior to cesarean, internal fetal monitoring, and a prolonged surgical duration. Treatment is with antibiotic therapy, wound exploration, and debridement. Endometritis occurs in 7 to 30% of cases. Risk factors include cesarean delivery performed during labor, no prior cesarean section, rupture of membranes for more than 24 hours, a young maternal age, greater number of vaginal exams, internal fetal monitoring, and manual placental removal. Treatment is with broad-spectrum antibiotic therapy, and most commonly it is IV clindamycin and gentamicin. Hemorrhage occurs in 4 to 7% of cases. Risk factors include fibroids, blood clotting disorders, abnormal placentation, antepartum bleeding, preterm birth, general anesthesia, retained placenta, and macrosomia. Treatment is with fluid administration, oxygen, rapid surgical hemostasis, IV oxytocin, uterotonics, blood transfusion, and a potential hysterectomy. With regards to prognosis, remember that advantages of a cesarean delivery include less pain during delivery, avoids perineal trauma, women can plan time of delivery, it may prevent incontinence and pelvic organ prolapse, it reduces the likelihood of neonatal infections, it reduces birth trauma for the neonates, and it reduces risk of intrapartum fetal cerebral damage. Disadvantages include the potential for anesthetic complications, potential for surgical site infections, potential for organ injury, a longer recovery, the potential for decreased ability to breastfeed, it may cause complications in future pregnancies, a longer hospital stay, and an increased cost. That's all for this review about indications for cesarean. We hope that was helpful. This is the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast, a daily audio review session from MedBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for medical student education. As a reminder, you can follow along with these podcast episodes by reviewing the topics directly on MedBullets.com. You can listen to these episodes on the MedBullets website or phone app while reading through the topic. If the MedBullets podcast has been valuable to you, we'd be thrilled if you considered leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here, on the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast.